Hello, and welcome to Let's Talk MedTech, the premier podcast for the medical device and diagnostic industry. I'm Omar Ford, the host of Let's Talk MedTech and the editor-in-chief of MDDI. On this episode, we're diving into robotics with Stereotaxis CEO, David Fischel. David has held the position of CEO and chairman of the board of Stereotaxis since 2017. This is going to be an incredible conversation, and I can't wait for you all to hear it. So without further ado, let's dive right on in. Let's talk MedTech with Stereotaxis's David Fischel. Well, hello, David, and welcome to Let's Talk MedTech. Thanks for coming on to the program.
Thanks a lot, Omar.
I'm super excited to talk about Stereotaxis, but first, let's talk a little bit about you and how you got into healthcare and into med tech.
Sure. So I run Stereotaxis. We're a medical device company. We make robot used for endovascular, minimally invasive cardiovascular procedures. I got to med tech relatively early. My parents are physician scientists, and so I was kind of raised around medicine. And then after graduating, I studied math in undergrad, went to UCLA in Los Angeles, studied math. And my first job after college was working in a medical device firm, a venture capital firm. So I went to Israel to do my MBA and worked in an Israeli medical device venture firm, where really kind of you're exposed to the full array of innovations from, you know, orthopedic surgery to imaging devices to diabetes to stroke to cardiovascular and had to assess those. And then I came back to the States and worked in a healthcare investment fund called Daphne Capital, based in Los Angeles, focused on life sciences. And my specialty, given that I'd been in the medtech field prior, was investing in publicly traded medical device companies, usually smaller companies that are, pioneering and trying to push the boundaries of medicine forward in some ways, some more meaningful ways. We didn't do hospital supplies. We didn't do services. It really was kind of a med tech in the purest form. And I that was always as a fundamental but passive investor. So never took board seats, never took operating kind of a responsibility for a company, but came across Stereotaxis in 2016. And it was a super interesting a case study, because you had a really differentiated, interesting robotic technology with good clinical value that was had great kind of clinical data and was being used regularly in day-to-day use by hospitals around the world. And so that's kind of a perfect setup for a company to be differentiated and to work well in the real world and to have great clinical data. But the company was nearly going bankrupt. And so that kind of piqued my interest. And through the process, ultimately, of due diligence, we decided to invest in the company to pay off its debt, to take board seats and to start to roll our sleeves up and help build the company up again. And so in 2017, I joined as CEO. And since then, I've been learning all the operations of a medical device company.
So you have like the best of both worlds, right? You've been an investor and you're also CEO. You're also running a company. So you've got the complete story there. You can kind of have both halves of the equation.
Yeah, I like how you say it. And there's a beautiful synergy to investing, where you get kind of to see the breadth of the landscape, and you have to think you're not actually responsible for anything specific, but you have to think critically about how you think the future of medicine will evolve. And then kind of getting you in the weeds and in the dirt of kind of the actual grind of making progress happen, innovations and manufacturing and every aspect of operations. So it's a nice synergy to be able to move from, you know, one side to the other.
Awesome. Well, now you've been talking a little bit about Stereotaxis, but let's dive a little bit deeper into the space that it occupies. And let me kind of frame the question a little bit more. Let me be more specific. How are you helping to shape the surgical robotics market?
Sure. So when we think about surgical robotics, obviously robots are now playing in amazingly impactful part of surgery overall, right? You probably have something like 10,000 to 15,000 robots that are treating 3 million plus patients a year globally. So robots are in surgery in a big, big way and to stay. That's kind of a secular shift in medicine that is already playing out in a really significant way. When you think about essentially all of the robotic players, you can categorize them in two big categories: laparoscopic robots, right? Mm-hmm. So the Da Vinci system by Intuitive Surgical, that's kind of the poster child. That's really what kind of has led this kind of field. But it's a laparoscopic surgical tool, robotic tool, and all the competitive systems that are trying to now kind of catch up or meet or address niche aspects that, you know, Intuitive is not perfectly suited for, and they find their own niche around that. Or orthopedic robots, right? So hip, knee, arthroplasty, spine surgery, cranial surgery, kind of all of the orthopedic surgeries. We are operating in a completely different world, which is endovascular procedures. So, you know, every catheter-based procedure where you move a catheter through the blood vessels to the heart or to the brain or to the lower limbs or wherever else you need to deliver therapy, that whole field of medicine is a huge field. You have tens of millions of procedures a year, and you have essentially no robots in them. And there's kind of reasons for that. It's when you look at kind of, let's say, a Da Vinci system, or you look at the orthopedic robots, a Mako or a Mazor, they are they're in some ways fairly, you can see the similarity to, let's say, what you would typically think of as an industrial robot. When you have to operate in the blood vessels, you have to operate in a tortuous anatomy, sure, right? It has to mm-hmm. be flexible. You can't have straight lines and rigidity. You have to operate in flexibility. You have to operate in very small vessels, and they're very, very delicate. And so that mix of needing to be flexible in delicate small vessels means that you can't think about robots in the typical way, and you have to have a completely different mechanism of action. And that's kind of where we came up. We have a very different mechanism of action for how to do robots in this field.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the Da Vinci and you mentioned Intuitive Surgical, and the layperson, when they think of surgical robotics, that's what they go to. They just think of that. It's just a broad encompassing, just brand name. And I remember when smartphones first came out, all the smartphones were called iPhones, right? That was the one, you know, there was no differentiation, even though there were different brands, but that's kind of how it was. You operate in an interesting space, and you operate in a different space. Is it difficult to kind of communicate that message out to, I don't want to say to physicians or to surgeons, but what about to patients? Because we're seeing patients becoming more and more used to taking care of their health, and they want to know what's being used on them now. Have you run into any of that at all? Or
yeah, so we tried to do patient education. Sure. Obviously, given the big impact that Intuitive Surgical has had, patients are much more aware of robotics and the benefits of precision and stability and kind of the safety benefits of that. And I think there's a type of a halo effect which generally is beneficial for robotics across applications, given the good work that they have done. But there is also, and so kind of we have a patient-oriented website, we have social media, we try to make sure that kind of patients can be informed and make the right choice for themselves. There is always confusion though also, and so even physicians oftentimes, you know, how many physicians, you know, until you don't share it with them, the concept that procedural medicine can generally be categorized into open surgery, laparoscopic surgery, endovascular surgery. And if you think about that categorization, okay, Da Vinci is the kind of the one that's driving robotics here, and, you know, Mako Mazor with Stryker Medtronic were the ones driving it here. And, you know, and you have many other robots, but in reality, endovascular is its own unique area of procedural medicine, and a huge area of procedural medicine. with essentially no robotics. We're a small company. We have about 150 employees based in St. Louis. I'm actually in Minneapolis at our office in Minneapolis right now. We have about 100 hospitals around the world that use our robot. So it's kind of tiny in the, it's a drop in the bucket of the overall field. But, you know, that's our area of medicine that we want to pioneer robotics into. Sure. And even most physicians, until you don't describe it like that, they don't necessarily pick up on the different nuances between robotic systems.
Makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Let's back a little bit and talk about your core product. I'm guessing, and I could be wrong, but is the robotic magnetic navigation system your core product? Okay. Yep. Can we dive into it a little bit? And why is this a helpful system for surgeons and patients?
So sure. So we make Genesis X robots, and the mechanism of action and kind of it's when we talk about, let's say, drugs, right? We always talk about what's the mechanism of action? How does it actually work? A robot is not a robot is not a robot. The way it works, the mechanism is really, really key. So if you think you have to go back to kind of what's the challenge? What's the unmet medical need, right? The reason for any medical device company to exist is that there's unmet medical need. Ultimately, we're all patients, right?
Sure.
It's terrible to be sick. All of us get sick in some ways. There's still a lot of room for medicine to improve. And so the primary mechanistic unmet medical need with endovascular surgery as a whole with catheters is that a physician is inserting a catheter, usually femoral access in the upper leg or, you know, radial access in the arm. And then they're, you know, navigating that catheter through the blood vessels to, let's say, the heart, right? Or to the brain or to the lower limbs or wherever else it is, but let's say to the heart. And now the physician has control over the catheter from one end, but the actual procedure, the diagnosis and therapy is taking place at the other end of the catheter, you know, 2, 3, 4 feet away. How do you control this end with precision of a flexible device when you only have control from this end? It relies on two kind of physical properties. You have relatively rigid plastic along the shaft of the catheter, and you have a little wire. So if you pull a lever, the catheter goes like this. And that's kind of how all motion at the tip happens. It works, but there's limitations, right? If you had a perfectly rigid device, like, again, I'm in a manufacturing area, so let's say like this, what I do on one end will translate perfectly to the other end, right? So if I turn my hand 90 degrees, the tip will turn 90 degrees. If I move my hand 1 centimeter forward, the tip will move 1 centimeter forward. But if you move this from your leg to your heart, you're going to cause a lot of trauma. That's not going to be healthy for the patient. So you have a flexible device, but if you have a flexible device, you might turn your hand 90 degrees and the tip only turns 50 degrees or turns 150 degrees, right? You have translational errors over this whole length. So what we did is we did something kind of a wild scientist idea at the time, and amazingly, it actually worked. And I wasn't responsible for that. So kudos to the original scientists who came up with this. But they take a catheter, make the plastic very soft, so it's now like a piece of cooked spaghetti, and put little magnets in the distal tip of the catheter. And then what our robot is on both sides of the patient, when the patient's lying on the operating room table in the cath lab, you have kind of magnets on robotic arms. And when the physician says they want to move the catheter in this direction or that direction or whatever direction in 3D space, we know how to adjust the magnetic field accordingly so that essentially, you can think about the magnets as these invisible fingers that are allowing the physician to hold onto the tip of the catheter directly. And now you can move the tip of the catheter with millimeter precision. You can hold it steady anywhere you want. You can do bends and twists and turns that would otherwise be impossible. And you're doing it all with a very soft, gentle catheter that is atraumatic. And so that's really kind of our mechanistic benefit. What that translates to ultimately is that patients get more precision with a safer catheter, and that you can do things with catheters that otherwise wouldn't be possible. One of the nicest things, kind of, again, as a medical device company, your reason to exist is to treat unmet medical needs, to help make medicine better, is that kind of there's quite a lot of use of our technology to treat, let's say, complex arrhythmias, where the heart doesn't beat regularly and you need to go into the ventricle and kind of ablate in portions of the heart that are difficult to reach, or patients with congenital heart disease, right? They're born with heart abnormalities as a child. They have heart surgery. They almost all get arrhythmias later, and being able to treat them, or pediatric patients. Kind of, and so these types of patients that are usually undertreated, they don't have great options, and when you do things in a different way, you enable kind of treatment for those patients.
Interesting. Interesting. I want to talk now. I want to talk about the Genesis X robotic system. And I understand that there was a showing at HRS. Could you talk a little bit about that demo?
Sure. So Genesis X is our newest robotic system. We got CE mark in Europe. We're working through the FDA approval process, so hopefully we'll have that also relatively soon. And Genesis X really kind of what we've done. We've been focused on three primary areas of innovation over the last several years. We've invested, $50 to $100 million in R&D over the last 5+ years. Focused on three big efforts. One was, how do you make the robot kind of better, right? Workflow better for the physician, more responsive, and very importantly, and this is where Genesis X was particularly helpful, more accessible. So if you have the best technology in the world, but it's impossible for a hospital to adopt it, then its impact is very muted. Our robots to date have always been things that required a hospital to construct a cath lab kind of specific to our robot. And what with Genesis X, we have the opportunity to place the robot in existing cath labs. So that just makes it much easier for a hospital to gain access to the system and to then offer it, obviously, to its physicians and patients. And the second big area of innovation has been the right catheters and tools so that both in electrophysiology to treat patients with heart arrhythmias and in multiple other applications where from stroke to tumors to interventional cardiology, interventional radiology, and how do you kind of allow the robot to be helpful in those procedures? And so developing the right portfolio of catheters that allow your robot to be helpful across that breadth of procedures. And then the third one was how do you add intelligence and kind of certain, digital capabilities to the robot beyond the mechanistic precision and safety. So that's kind of where most of our innovation efforts have been, in those three big buckets.
And I want to talk now a little bit, and you've mentioned this kind of throughout our conversation, but again, you're a smaller company. Surgical robotics, obviously, you're in a niche area of it, of course, but surgical robotics, there are a lot of larger strategics that are out there that are playing in various spaces. How do you, I'm not going to say compete because you are in a niche area, but just, is it a little bit intimidating to kind of be in these waters when you have some of these larger companies? Or is it more of a challenge? Because when I think about surgical robotics, I know we've gone back and forth with this, but when I think about it, I think about some of the larger players and I think about some of the smaller players that are trying to get their name out there, that are trying to get that branding recognition. How do you exist in this vast space?
Yeah. Yes. I would say actually, so first a little kind of a nuanced correction in this. I'd say we don't operate in a niche in terms of the markets that we're going after. Let's say the primary market, electrophysiology, cardiac ablation procedures to treat heart arrhythmias. It is by now 1.6, 1.7 million patients are being treated every year with cardiac ablation. It's a $10 billion medical device market. It's, and if you look at interventional cardiology, interventional radiology, neurointerventional fields, these are all big, big, big areas of medicine with millions of patients being treated annually and with still room for improvement and significant need and really no robotic solution at all. So we're operating actually in huge fields. What's amazing is that there's actually just no robot there. And that's not because there haven't been attempts. It's that this challenge of, how do you deal with flexibility and the tiny size and kind of the delicate anatomy? It makes it very hard for most robot mechanisms to work well. And when I step back, kind of, I don't view an Intuitive Surgical or a Mako or a Mazor or any of those things as competition, because we're so, the same way that I couldn't, with all of our robotic expertise, I couldn't build a laparoscopic surgical robot. I don't have that expertise. It's a different world, a different type of system. Similarly, our robot is so different than everything else out there. It lives in its own world. What is tough, right, is that, and you see it in medical devices as a whole, is that just having a great product isn't always sufficient for success. Commercialization is always a challenge. Operations is always a challenge. You need to build a business and you need to do it kind of in a full way. And that's where there are giants, obviously, in the med tech field. And when you have a field of medicine that has evolved over decades, where everyone is trained, all physicians are trained on how to move catheters with their hands throughout their interventional cardiology, electrophysiology trainings, then changing that, medicine doesn't flip on the dime, right? It usually evolves gradually. And so when you're a form of dramatic innovation, you have to kind of, you know, you have to, it's transformational products, and that does require it. It's much easier, you know, if you have exactly the same thing, you have one pen, make another pen, it's exactly the same, but it costs a little bit less, or it has one slight feature that's a little bit nicer and better. You know, that's a relatively easy sell. When you want to change the way medicine happens in a dramatic way, that is obviously a more of a missionary evangelical type of sell.
No, that makes, that's amazing, because you want to change something. You want to kind of change the paradigm and cause as less trauma. And what I mean by trauma, I mean, you know, you don't want to lose the doctors in the process. You want to bring them along with that. So no, I totally get it. Totally understand that. Where do you see the business in the next 5 years? And what's on the horizon for Stereotaxis?
So this is great. You talk about 5 years. We talk about internally, I talk always about 7-year plans. So, you know, it's good to have that kind of a long-term outlook always about where you're going. And when I look kind of what's really playing out this year is to some extent the realization of the last 7-year plan. To some extent, it's always loose. It doesn't work exactly as you plan it, but roughly kind of the last 7-year plan, which is we've developed this broad kind of ecosystem of products that work very nicely together in terms of making the robot something that is more broadly accessible, our own catheters in electrophysiology and in vascular use, so that you can kind of use the robot with our own disposables in those fields, right? And starting kind of the platform for digital surgery with, we have, let's say, a connectivity solution which allows collaboration in the cath lab between the physicians there and those remote. We announced recently that we're part of a certain NVIDIA program for advancing augmented intelligence into the cath lab. And so kind of we've kind of started to put these all in place, and we're getting up many regulatory approvals this year. So we have probably almost a 2-handful worth of regulatory submissions that have gone in this year and approvals that are being received this year for the robot in Europe and the US, for an ablation catheter in Europe and the US, for a high density mapping catheter in Europe and the US, for a vascular guide catheter in Europe and the US, and for kind of an operating solution, a digital operating solution in both geographies as well. And so you kind of have this broad set of multiple regulatory approvals in both geographies and initial commercial use. So kind of showing that these technologies actually work well in the real world and can provide value to patients and physicians. So that's kind of what's playing out this year. When I look out kind of over the next 5 years, what really is happening is, how do you demonstrate that at scale, these technologies can actually have an impact? So you can have not just, you know, 5 hospitals a year that are adopting a robot, but you can actually have 100 hospitals a year that adopt the robot because they're able to adopt it relatively easily without kind of that big infrastructure investments. And they're adopting it not just to treat patients with heart arrhythmias, but also to treat patients with stroke and cancer and peripheral disease and you know, and kind of everything in between. And so that's kind of a big area of focus. We're definitely going to expand the portfolio of catheters. There's a lot of room still for improvement of the robotic systems. We have nice things that have been in development. You never stop, kind of, you want to do continuous innovation. There's definitely a room for expansion of the portfolio of catheters, particularly as we become a multi-specialty platform company in endovascular surgery. Really kind of what we developed so far is just the first guide catheter and guide wire, but there's a much broader portfolio that can be helpful in kind of the neuro interventional cardiology peripheral space. And then I think what you're going to see, and this maybe is, I need to go take your 5 years and make it a 10-year plan.
Sure.
Over the last even if I step back, not just Stereotaxis, but I look at robotics in this field, right, really evolved over the last 20 years or so, right? Intuitive's kind of started to hit its stride in 2001, 2003 is when it kind of started to have traction. So if you look at kind of the robotics over this period, from laparoscopic robotics to orthopedic robotics to our system, robots are still used essentially for their mechanistic benefits, for the precision, for the stability, for the safety profile. That's why they get used. What you're going to see over the next decade is how do you add kind of this concept of digital intelligence to the robot? And that comes in multiple forms. It comes in kind of, you can use all the catchwords of the day and AI and machine learning and all this, but let's kind of boil it down to very specific things. So you can definitely do decision support systems. So when a physician is in the middle of a procedure, there is data from the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of procedures that happened before them, where insights can be gleaned. And if you can share that insight intraoperatively with the physician, you can help them make better decisions. That's kind of one big area of room for improvement. Then there's image integration, information integration. How do you share all the, in a cath lab environment, oftentimes a physician is looking at 4, 5, 6 different forms of diagnostic information on the patient, looking at an X-ray, and they're looking at mapping systems, and they're looking at EKGs, and they're looking at ultrasound images, and they're looking at the patient vitals, right? And they're kind of, they have to look at all of these things. How do you present this to the physician as they're doing the procedure in the easiest way, with integration of data, overlaying things over each other? Maybe you overlay the preoperative scans with the intraoperative map overlaid over the X-ray, and that way you can see all of that anatomy kind of in one fashion, kind of where it's aligned together. And how do you kind of present information to the physician intraoperatively, allowing them to make the best decisions possible? How do you bring connectivity to cath lab, both for collaboration and for long distance surgery, right? And how do you do automation? How do you help that the robot should be able to automate some of the routine and more boring aspects of a procedure? They should be able to help you do that kind of consistently. And so I kind of think those are four very tangible ways where you can add kind of support beyond just the mechanistic benefits to a robot.
Yes, yeah, the 10-year plan, and we've heard some of that from some of the companies that we've been interviewing and talking to, just what innovations that they would look forward to, 5 to 10 years out. And, you know, it goes, you know, a little bit beyond AI. It's a little specific, and I'm glad that you added the specificity to this. So interesting. It'll be interesting to see where we are 10 years from now with surgical robotics, but before we close, I have to ask you, what do you say to that young entrepreneur or that biomedical engineer that young bleeding heart that wants to enter into this crazy world of med tech? What do you say? What kind of advice or what advice would you give them?
go for it. In short, go for it. Right. You kind of, in life, you want to do things that, that are meaningful, that are kind of interesting, challenging, and where you can be rewarded, right? That's kind of, I think those three are kind of three core things in any professional you choose. Obviously, when you work in medicine, there's an intrinsic meaning to it because you see the patients that you impact, you see the improvement of care. And again, we're all patients. It's, humanity as a whole, if we focus on our joint problems, which we all share, the forces of nature that kind of still need to be tamed and the disease that kind of hurts everyone, that's, I think, intrinsically motivating for most of us, for all of us. Working in med tech and particularly in robotics and med tech is intrinsically kind of interesting and challenging because you have multidisciplinary engineering, right? You need to think about, you have large mechanical systems, you have micro catheters and instruments, you have a software, control software, firmware, UI software, you have electrical boards and the firmware on those. You really have to think about engineering in a comprehensive way, and you have to think about how those devices actually work in the real world with people and with humans and with patients, and the bar that is set is very high because you can't have failures, right? You can't have robots that are having malfunctions, that a patient's life is on the line. So that's good. And then obviously, if you're successful, you can be rewarded in the field. So I think kind of I'd say go for it in brief.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, David, thanks for coming on to Let's Talk MedTech. Appreciate having you here.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for this episode of Let's Talk MedTech. Thanks again to our guest, David Fischel, the CEO of Stereotaxis. If you love this content and want to keep up with all the news and events in the MedTech industry, check us out at mddionline.com. That's mddionline.com. Finally, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Let's Talk MedTech on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. We'll be right back.